There?
I am here.
It says recording in progress.
That's right. I hit the record button. So that is taken off the checklist. I had some follow-up from last episode before we jump into today's topic.
Okay.
If that's okay. Did you have anything?
Absolutely. I thought I had a couple things, but I didn't write them down. And now I can't think of what they were, except just to say, I got hundreds of sympathy cards and letters and notes from people, a lot of people I didn't even know, that had known Bill, that had flown with Bill in Vietnam and so forth. And they were all so lovely. And I think it's interesting to note that a number of them said, Bill was such a great person, and he was the most honest person I've ever met. And I thought, wow, that's a nice compliment. Does that mean he blurted out exactly what he was thinking? Yeah, most of the time. No filters. No, he was a very honest person. So that's nice to be known for a good trait, right?
Yep.
And a couple from people that, from a long time ago that said he was the best and the hardest working athlete they had ever met. So both of those things were very complimentary and something that you guys wouldn't know. So anyway, that was about it, I guess.
That's nice. I ran across a few of those. I doubt it was all of them, but I'm sure they're still up in my closet, that some of that correspondence stuff that's been saved over the years.
Yeah.
At least a handful of sympathy stuff for Dad.
Yeah.
My follow-up was on the running, the 10-mile run that he did with Buddy. I had always envisioned them on a track inside the Pentagon, but the way you phrased it last week made me think that maybe they were running outside or somewhere else.
They were running outside. They used to go across the that bridge right by the Pentagon, which I think was the Lincoln Memorial Bridge.
Uh-huh.
And then down around, all the government buildings to the Capitol and around that way and then back. It was a long run, but they did it outside every day.
That's awesome and so much cooler than what I had in my head. I love the idea of them running around Washington, D.C. for 10 miles.
They did the mall.
In January.
The mall. Yeah, seriously. And your dad hated cold weather, so that was saying something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was where they ran. So.
Right on. Well, so the other thing is more follow-up information as opposed to a follow-up question. But I did a little internet sleuthing and found Bodie Bodenheim.
I did too.
Living in Cibolo, Texas, which is northeast of San Antonio, less than an hour from
okay.
us.
Okay, Bill's friend, Bodie. I found his uncle, who's quite the notorious mayor of Longview.
Okay, uncle or grand, I think he might have been a couple generations back, because he was mayor from 1901 to 1921 or something like that.
Yeah.
And their house, their historic house, is still in what's the name of the town?
Longview.
Longview. There's a subdivision or small village or something outside of Longview called Bodieville or something that's based on their family. And so they seem to be quite the founding fathers of Longview.
Interesting. No wonder they were such good buddies, good old Texas boys. So you said Bodie lives in Cibolo?
Yep.
And where is that?
Or from what I can tell, everything points to that on the internet. He's 77 and living in Cibolo, Texas. And
that makes perfect sense.
That's what I thought. I haven't gone on Facebook to look for him or anything like that because I don't go there. But Laura's threatening to try to make contact, and I'm not discouraging her.
I think that would be interesting. I think it would be
super cool. I'd rather her do it than me.
Of course you would.
let her take on that part of this project. Yeah. Anyway, so that was fun to see and super interesting that he was or is in such striking distance of us here. And then the only other kind of, this is more of a footnote than follow up, but I, in those pictures you sent me, I noticed that there were, Grandma had a list of the pallbearers, and it was Sambo, Richard, Ben, Steve, Dave, and George Stewart.
Yep. When I went to look in the photo album, I was like, of course, Mom would have documented all that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was glad to see that because I absolutely had no recollection.
Uh-huh. So. Yeah. That's interesting. I didn't,
Which explains why Bruce Majar held Billy the whole time. He wasn't one of the pallbearers.
I was a little bit surprised that he wasn't the one of the, or he wasn't the one and only pallbearer given his size, but
seriously.
And then
put,
I don't
put the coffin up on his shoulder.
It. You probably mentioned it, but I had forgotten if you did say that George Stewart was there, and I imagine Janine or Gene
Stewart. You know, Stewart.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Gene and George. It's amazing. I thought I kind of had my act together when I remember stuff during that time. But obviously, when you're in shock, you know, you see people interviewed on the stand in lawsuits and they just say, I can't recall. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's stuff you'd think people would remember. But yeah.
Yeah.
I was obviously zoned.
Yep. Understandably. So anyway, that's all the follow-up I had on that. And then I think we decided that today we're going to turn back and just talk about Dad's life.
Yeah, I think that's important. So your dad was born on November 11th, 1941, which was, I guess, about 3 weeks before the United States got involved in World War II, right? Before Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th, mm-hmm. 1941. I'm not sure if his dad was already in the military. I would not be surprised because that was not long after the recession. And a lot of men, like from the South and especially from West Texas, where there were no jobs and stuff, joined the military just to make a living, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't know that. But I'm sure that when Pearl Harbor hit, he joined the military if he wasn't already involved.
They were in Abilene when he was born. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep. And your dad weighed, I've got his birth certificate. I mean, he's right here. He weighed 9 pounds. He was a big baby. If I could read what this birth announcement said, it says, come by and see us at 810, maybe it's South Cameron Street or something like that. Oh, Sycamore Street, Abilene, Texas. And Gracie's parents lived in, Harry's parents lived in Abilene. They had a little farm outside of Abilene where your dad and I spent a lot of good times with his grandmother. Granny Bright. And then Gracie's parent, Bill's mother, Gracie's parents lived in Tuscoma, I think it was like 11 or 15 miles outside of Abilene in just a teeny, teeny West Texas town. You know, have you ever seen that movie, The Last Picture Show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. There were like three buildings in the downtown and, you know, maybe 25, 50 houses, and that was it. They were farmers, but the land out there was so dry and so, you know, hard to farm. I have no idea how they made a living, but they managed to. And so Gracie's parents were named, good old Texas name, okay, Lula Bell was her mom, and her dad's name was William. So that's where Billy's name comes from, obviously, or, you know, your dad's name, Harry William. Mm-hmm. He was named for both the grandfathers.
Okay. I never knew that.
Well, I didn't either, but I just, when I was looking at this, I was like, oh, of course, that makes sense.
What are you looking at that has this information in it?
An old photo album that I think Gracie gave me, that you can look at when you're here. Or maybe, you know what, Steve Wright brought it to me.
I've got a copy of that.
Yeah, of photos from when they went, well, when your dad was born. And then, you know, Steve was not born. Steve was 4.5 years younger than your dad. So, you know, obviously that was during the war. And I think Harry, their father, was gone most of the time. So, you know, mm-hmm. Bill was born. The war went on for what, 4 years, 4.5 years. And then he came back and then Steve was born. So, yeah, Gracie stayed there in Abilene during the war. And Bill spent most of the time with his mom and the grandparents. So
I have an observation, which I can follow up with Steve or someone would know the answer to this, I'm sure. But based on what you're saying with Harry, the fact that Dad was born in Abilene and they were living in Abilene would lead me to believe he probably wasn't in the military yet.
Well, there's an Air Force base there, but they were from Abilene.
And wouldn't that be a weird luxury? Wouldn't that be a weird luxury to join the military and be stationed where you're from? Or is that normal?
It would be totally unreal.
Okay. So, which leads me to the interesting conclusion that he may have been inspired to join directly because of Pearl Harbor.
And I'm guessing that's what happened as well.
And so, do you know which branch was he in?
He was in the Air Force.
Okay.
He was, and I have a feeling that before he joined the service, he was in a mechanic of some sort, because he became a really skilled airplane mechanic in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And when he got out of the Air Force, he was snapped up by Frontier Airlines in Denver to be their head, you know, their head inspector for mechanical work that was done on planes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that was probably pretty much what he did his whole life.
Was he ever overseas in the military, or did he?
He was overseas. And I'm not sure where. Steve Wright would know that as well, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was probably the European theater, but I'm not sure of that either. You know, my dad went to the European theater first. And then when Japan got involved, he was ferrying that group of five planes down across South America to the Pacific, and they went down in the Amazon, and he was down there for 4 or 5 months with nobody knowing where they were, including grandma. You know, there was no communication back then, and they were out in the middle of the jungle. So somebody apparently got word back eventually, but yeah, so I have a feeling he was probably in Europe first and then in the Pacific. So, and then when the war was over, I don't know where they went. I do know when your dad was like 12 and 13, maybe 11, 12 and 13, they lived in Japan.
Really?
Yeah, which your dad really loved. And he became real involved in Boy Scouts over there, which started his Boy Scouting, and he eventually ended up as an Eagle Scout. But and then when they came back, he started it at Grandview. I think he was either in eighth grade or a freshman.
Well, if they were in Japan, it must have been for military reasons, or I can't
imagine.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okay. No, absolutely. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, it was after the war, and I'm sure it was when we were over there, you know, helping Japan out, like we do after wars. So, yeah, it was definitely military. But Bill really loved he loved it over there. You know, they lived. We'll have to ask Steve. Steve was so little, he may not remember, but he probably knows, actually. I want to say Osaka, but maybe that's just because Brian McMath was over there. You know, they lived not on a base, but in the local landscape, and, you know, had a Japanese lady that worked for them. And They really liked it. So, well, I say your dad really liked it. I don't know. I think Gracie liked it too, although she was pretty much a Texas girl homebody. And then they came back to Grandview, Missouri, to Richard Schaubauer Air Force Base, which is where Granddad also ended up being stationed. And your dad started high school there at Grandview High School and got to be good friends with my brother Sambo and my brother Bruce, but Bill and Sambo became fast and best friends. And they played, you know, they played all sports together. They did track, basketball, football. I think the only thing they didn't do was baseball. So, yeah, your dad spent a lot of time at our house before he and I had any involvement, because he would come over there with Sambo and they would hang out. And of course, Grandma would feed everybody. So, yeah, your dad always came over before football games because Grandma always made steak and French fries for them before a football game.
Nice, huh?
Anyway, so, you know, he started high school and was very active. He lettered in all the sports he played in. Your dad did not like school. He was smart as a whip, but he did not like school. He was into athletics. I mean, he did okay. He wasn't an A student by any stretch of the imagination, but
So did they arrive in McLean directly from Japan, do you know? Or
you mean in Grandview?
I mean Grandview.
Yes, I would say so. From looking at the age your dad was in Japan, I would say they went from Japan to Grandview, which is basically Kansas City, a suburb of Kansas City, Missouri.
And what age would he have been when he got there-ish?
14, I'm guessing.
14. Okay.
Yeah. Because he was in
Japan for a significant part of his life. It wasn't just
or 3 years. Yeah, 2 or 3 years.
But it was like when he was 10 to 13, as opposed to, I'm guessing, 7 or 5 or something.
No. I've got some pictures right here. And, you know, you can tell he's doing scouting stuff and he's on hikes and he's got a canteen and he's, you know, got a bow and arrow and a...
I don't think I've seen those pictures.
Pellet gun or something. And yeah. Anyway, so yeah, they came back there, and at some point in time, I do know that Harry and Gracie, nobody in their family had ever graduated from college, you know, and Bill showed an interest in college, and they told him flat out that, you know, if he wanted to go to college, he was going to have to get a scholarship. So since he wasn't doing so hot in school, you know, I mean, athletics was his deal, period, you know. He loved it and he was good at it. And he was smart on the side without having to show it in class. Apparently he had been a reader since a small child and he was just an avid reader. And he was just, you know, he was smart on his own. But anyway, that doesn't help you in class, right? If you don't do the work. Anyway, they told him, they said, you know, if you ever want to go to college or after high school, do something. They were like, you're going to have to get a scholarship or pay for it or whatever. We can't afford it. So I think he set his sights on getting an athletic scholarship, you know, which he did. He was a really great runner and he loved football too, but he ended up getting a full track scholarship to the University of Missouri, which was a big deal. He was also offered one to Abilene Christian College in Abilene, which had a fantastic track team at the time. I don't know if they still do, but it was just one of those schools. It was a smaller school, so that track was a big deal. You know, they didn't really have enough big guys to have a good football team, but they were always known. In fact, one of their runners there, when Bill was applying, broke the world record, I think, in the 100 meter or something, you know, and your dad was sprinting was his specialty. So he did the 100, the 220, the 400, and then he did the 400 relay and the 880 relay, which he hated, but because he was definitely a sprinter, not a one, mm-hmm. which is interesting because then he got into, you know, long distance running when he was older. But yeah, it's hard to go out and run sprints, right? For exercise. Yeah. And I remember when we lived in Grandview, there was a train track that went perpendicular from where he lived and where our house was. And he would run the tracks. You know, that's a great exercise for runners to run to step on every railroad tie because
they're so close together.
Yeah, because they're so close together. So every night after we started dating, he would go up on the railroad tracks and run from his house to our house, and which was probably 5 miles. I don't know. It was a fair good distance. But anyway. So yeah, he graduated from high school.
Can I ask you something about those times before you go on? Did Harry and Gracie ever interact with Graham and Granddad?
Yeah, but not a lot. They were on different social scenes. You know, Harry mm-hmm. was an enlisted officer. Well, actually, he was a warrant officer, which is kind of in between. And Granddad was a fairly high-ranking officer. And it was just not something you did back in those days. You know, they had different clubs and everything at the base. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they were always at the ball games together and sat together. But as far as, you know, Air Force, no. But school and socially, you know, that didn't have to do with the Air Force. Absolutely.
Something I had not thought of before, but obviously makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't make any sense, but yeah, that's the way it was. rank and file, right? I will say that Sambo got an appointment. You know, your dad also applied to all the academies. I think he got an appointment to the Coast Guard and maybe the Marines. I can't remember. He did not get into the Air Force Academy. But Sambo was a year ahead in school, although he and your dad were born in the same year. And Sambo ended up getting an appointment to the Air Force Academy. And so he left that year before Bill graduated. And Bill came over to tell him good night the night before he left for the Air Force Academy. And I remember sitting out in the backyard and them getting totally emotional and crying and saying how much they were going to miss each other. And yeah, they were very close friends. Anyway, so then, yeah, your dad had a senior year there at Grandview, which was a very small school. I think in Bruce's class and in Sambo's class, too, there were only like 34 graduates. You know, it was very small. So everybody knew everybody. And so, yeah, then your dad had his senior year there and, you know, applied to a lot of colleges. And he had more offers, scholarship offers than that. I think he had a football scholarship somewhere, but obviously that full track scholarship to a Big 12 or Big 10, what is the University of Missouri? Well, it's Southeast Conference now, but back then.
Yeah, I don't know what it was in back then, but I think it was part of that conference with like TCU and Texas and stuff, wasn't it?
I don't remember TCU, Texas, yes, I think, and Kansas and Oklahoma and,
yeah,
you know, the University
TCU
of Oklahoma.
TCU was a big part of that conference. That's when they were so big in football.
He went off to he and I started dating, I guess his senior year. And then he went off to the University of Missouri.
So did you guys go to homecoming and prom and all of the high school things together?
We went once or twice, but we didn't start dating until I think like the spring of his senior year.
Okay.
Yeah. So we did some stuff. And then, like I say, he went off to, that summer after he graduated, I did go to a bunch of stuff with him down in Kansas City. He tried out for the pentathlon for the Olympics. And I went down and watched all that. And actually a guy who went really far in running and stuff too, called, his last name was Toomey. But it was
where would those Olympics have been?
1960. Look it up.
I will.
I mean, I'm guessing it was 60. It might have been 58, but 60 sounds like an Olympics year, doesn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, so he went off to the University of Missouri. My dad had gotten transferred to McLean, Virginia, the year before, and grandma and the children stayed in Grandview so that Sambo could finish his last year of high school there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we packed up and moved to McLean that summer. And then I started McLean High School as a sophomore. And I got a job at a dry cleaners at a little local dry cleaning place in a strip mall there, right down the street from Ethel and Robert Kennedy's house in McLean, Virginia, and worked, got off the bus every afternoon and worked from 3:30 till 7:30 to earn money to buy a plane ticket to go see Bill.
So he was at Missouri as a freshman when you were a sophomore in McLean?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I did. I made enough money to, I can't remember. I think I flew out there for, it was a formal of some kind, you know, it may have been a fraternity formal or something. He had pledged Sigma Chi that freshman year. And we had a great time and flew back. And then he came at Christmas that year. He came to Virginia for Christmas. And Sambo flew home from the, no, Sambo did not fly home from the academy because they don't let him leave that first year. But he did come in January. Sambo came in January when President Kennedy was inaugurated because he marched in the parade. And then Bill went back to school. And then I can't remember when we saw each other. But anyway, so then after we stayed in McLean for 2 years and your dad and I kept dating. We had a long distance romance. And then just before my senior year, granddad came home from work one night. He was so excited. He was like, "We're getting out of here." You know, no military person likes being stationed in DC because it costs a fortune to live there. Everything's political. You know, it's just not a fun place to live for military people. It's always stressful. So anyway, he was like, so where were we? We were in McLean, Virginia, and carrying on a long distance romance. So granddad came home from, I think he was working at the FAA, the Federal Aviation Agency, which is not associated with the military at all, but they are required to have one Air Force member on their board, which is what he was doing. And he, you know, he did not have good feelings or vibes for the FAA, you know, because he just didn't, because they controlled pilots, right?
Well, I remember how much he hated flying as a passenger. I don't even really ever remember him flying as a passenger. I'm sure he did at some point, but
I don't either, but they drove, I'm sure he everywhere. Did at some point too. Well, and your dad was the same way. Talk about white knuckles. When we had to get on a commercial airplane, he would be like, "They don't know what they're doing." He was like, I'd be like, "Stop. They do know what they're doing. You're just not in charge." So anyway, he came home and he was like super excited. You know, of course, I'm getting ready to go into my senior year of high school, right? Not that I cared. I had not made any good friends. And I was more interested in dealing with my long distance romance and getting good grades in school. McLean High School at the time was the number one ranked academic high school in the United States, and it was hard. It was tough, which was good for me, right? So I worked really hard. I did a lot of homework, and then of course I was working every day after school. Anyway, he was like, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. We've got orders. We're going to Alaska. We all looked at each other and went, Alaska? And he was like, yeah, it's going to be awesome. You know, granddad was always excited about, you know, going somewhere. And he was like, you know, I was stationed on the Aleutian chain during the war on Adak Island. And he said, I got to be really good friends with some people up there. And Bob Reeves, who started Reeves Aleutian Airlines, is still up there. And I can't wait to see him. And he's almost 90. And I mean, just on and on and on. And of course, Mom and Richard and Ben and I were all looking at each other going, really? we're going to Alaska. So we were like, awesome, you know? We had orders to Alaska. And when summer came along, we packed everything up. Well, we had to pack up 600 pounds or whatever it was that we thought we couldn't live with. And the rest of our stuff went in storage, furniture and everything, because the houses up there were furnished because it cost so much to ship stuff up there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we started off on a trek, and we left McLean in our 1961 Ford Fairlane, white, great car. Anyway, to drive across the United States and then put the car on a ship to go to Alaska, and we were going to get on an airplane and fly the rest of the way. But in the meantime, on the way, we were going to stop by Kalamazoo, Michigan, and see Red and Dab Sugg, you know, Mom's best friend from college. And anyway, so we started off and went across the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and you know, that upper level turnpike and interstates. And but I do have to tell you something funny. When we got ready to leave, you know, typical grandma, she had washed her underwear out the night before because, you know, we couldn't pack very much. And so she wanted to start off with a clean pair of underwear. And so we got in the car, and the underwear was still wet because it was 100% cotton and it hadn't dried overnight. And she hung it on the mirror outside the car to dry off while we were driving. And it almost caused Dad to have and he was like, what are you doing? You can't hang your underwear on the mirror. She was like, nobody's gonna see it, you know, we're gonna be driving out in the car. Anyway, she took her underwear off and off the mirror and put it inside. Anyway, I always remember that sight of leaving Washington, which was kind of symbolic, right? Leaving Washington with your underwear hanging on the mirror. Anyway, so I think we spent the first night in Ohio or Indiana or somewhere there in the Midwest. And the next day we went to Kalamazoo, Michigan. And I called your dad from a payphone somewhere where we were spending the night and told him where we were and where we were going the next day. And so we got to Dab and Red's house in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which was on a beautiful lake. It was a lovely home. I'd never been to Michigan. And it was, I think, in August, maybe July or August. It was August, actually. And so, you know, we greeted them and said hi, and we hadn't seen you in a while, and everything was great, and everybody was catching up. Dab's, or Red, said to me, she was like, Fran, you may want to go downstairs and check out the den downstairs or something. And I went downstairs, and there was your dad sitting on the sofa. He had hitchhiked all the way from Missouri to Kalamazoo after I called him the night before to tell him where we were going. And it was crazy. So he stayed with us for a couple of days and then got in the car and drove with us to the Air Force Academy, where we stopped to see Sambo on the way to Alaska. And then as we were leaving Colorado Springs, we put your dad on the bus to go back to Columbia, Missouri to school. That was a sad moment. And we headed on up to through Wyoming. You know, we had to get to Seattle, put the car on a boat to get to Alaska. So I'll never forget it. My dad was trying to make me feel better because he knew I was lonely, sad because Bill had left and who knows when I was going to see him again. So anyway, we got just north of Denver and Granddad said, Frank, I was 16. I had had my license for like a year and a half, but I didn't drive that much in DC because the traffic was so crazy. So he said, Fran, why don't you drive? You know, we're out here in the middle of nowhere, Wyoming. He said, you just got to watch out for cows and things because it's open range. And he said, and by the way, there's no speed limit. And so I got in the car and man, I got that thing up to about 100 miles an hour. I think Mom and Richard and Ben were like, and Dad was like, that's right, go for it. Just watch for cattle on the road. You wouldn't want to hit a cow. I was like, no, you're right. Anyway, so yeah, that was quite the thrill for me. But we stopped at a few places in Wyoming. And then we spent the night somewhere in Wyoming at like an old cowboy hotel that was pretty cool, actually. Old, it had like the railing above, you know, kind of like that lodge that we ate in Montana, the Double Arrow Lodge. Mm-hmm. Where you look down from the second floor into the main level. Anyway, there were rooms off that second floor. We got two rooms, I think, and the boys and I stayed in one room, and Grandma and Granddad in the other, and then we walked downtown, you know, to wherever it was in Wyoming, and had a cowboy dinner and a steak and a bunch of pinto beans, right? And then we got in the car the next day and headed north. The only other place I remember, well, we stopped at Crater Lake in Oregon, looked at that, headed on up to Eastern Washington because Dad wanted to say hi to an old wartime buddy that was in Walla Walla, Washington. Mm-hmm. And stopped by and said hello to them and then headed on to Seattle and put the car on the ferry, on the, you know, it was a big car truck ferry where they took cars to Alaska and got a military, like taxi, military car, picked us up and took us back to, what is the name of that big Air Force base up there? Not MacDill, but that's Tampa. Anyway, to the base up there where we were spending a couple of days to get ready to go to Alaska. And then we got on the flight and flew to Alaska. Wow, that was
quite the adventure. Or military flight?
You know, the military charters commercial flights. You know, they're commercial flights, but they've got all military people on them. So, I can't remember what airlines it was, but SeaTac was the name of the airport there in Seattle. But we left from, golly, I can't not remember that name of that base. It's huge. We flew out of the base, you know, and landed in Elmendorf Air Force Base, Alaska. And our sponsors, which was common in the Air Force, met us, you know, and took us to our house, which was already furnished. So, and, you know, had food there and gave Grandmama a sourdough starter, which was the traditional Alaskan gift. And I'll never forget because the guy's name was Colonel Shivers, and they called him Shiv, S-H-I-V. And he was like, I'm so sorry my wife couldn't join us today to welcome you. But she stepped in the mouth of our bear we have on the floor of our bedroom, getting up to see about one of the kids and stuck the tooth through her foot. And I was like, I remember at the time, I was like, wow, welcome to Alaska. anyway. Yeah, goodness.
Well, right. If I could rewind a little bit, I wanted to ask, about, was Dad in ROTC in high school?
No, in college.
But he was in ROTC all the way through college?
Yeah, and we got sidetracked on me. Yes, your dad was ran track and was in ROTC all through college. And I think the second year of Air Force ROTC, you know, they learned how to fly. So he was taught how to fly. His professor's name was Mr. Cotton. And in a Cessna 150, a tricycle landing, you know, not so you got to put the nose down first and then gently put the back down. We didn't have any money, either one of us, but we used to go out there and Mr. Cotton would let us go flying. We would rent the plane for 15 minutes. We would go up and, you know, fly around for 15 minutes, come back down. Anyway, that was when your dad, they don't do that anymore. They don't teach them how to fly in ROTC. That's when you go to pilot training, but yeah.
So did he choose ROTC because he knew he wanted to be in the military, or was it a financial thing, or was it, or did it help
it was
pay
a
for school?
It was a financial thing. It helped you pay for school. And then he had his full track scholarship too. ROTC. I was going to tell you something else. So he did. And his good friend, Cully Klein, was also in Air Force ROTC, the guy who was the best man in our wedding. And so they learned how to fly together. And
were they on the track team together also, or were they just ROTC friends?
They were just ROTC. Cully was a little bit older. In fact, I think he was in law school when Bill was he hadn't finished yet, but he was maybe 2 years older than Bill. You know, and they ended up stationed together in Cameron Bay the first time your dad went to Vietnam. Where he was doing his 5 years or whatever. So yeah, but I guess it still is a good deal, but you know, you give the Air Force what, 4 or 5 years, and I'm not sure what it was. They pay you like $150 a month, which back then was a lot of money, you know. To be in ROTC, you know, just for spending money basically. I had something else I was going to tell you, which totally lost. But anyway, so your dad did track and ROTC all through college, and then he graduated in 1964. But the summer of 1963, when we were already in Alaska, granddad found your dad a job. So he came to Alaska for the summer and spent the summer with us, and had a great time. You know, Alaska is a sportsman's paradise, and your dad loved to hunt and fish. So, and of course, Richard and Ben were old enough then that, you know, they all had a great time together. And Sambo, I think had 2 or 3 weeks off and came up. But anyway, the job that granddad found your dad, was painting radar domes. So the Air Defense Command is the command that is in charge of Alaska. And so they have all those radar domes along the dew line, the distance early warning line, which is across the northern part of Alaska, to identify incoming foreign, you know,
Russian
or anybody that might, you know, come in that would be attacking the United States. So anyway, every 2 years they paint those radar domes, which are way up in the air, and the painters who painted them last leave a rope hanging from the top. You know, they're shaped like a balloon, so they leave a rope hanging from the top, and so the guys that are coming back to paint, they take turns grabbing onto that rope to crawl to the top to put a new rope on for the next, you know, next people coming. Anyway, your dad, I think he prayed every night that the weather would be too bad, because they would fly him up there in those bush planes, you know, that landed either with skis on a lake or because there were no airports or anywhere up where those radar domes were.
Well, that's a pretty common mode of transportation in Alaska anyway, isn't it?
More common than a car, probably. I'm sure it's probably changed a little bit, but if you look at a picture of the airport, Anchorage Airport, International Airport, it's got more pontoon planes per capita than anywhere in the world. Yeah. I mean, they're just, you know.
Yeah.
So, and Bob Reeves, that friend of granddad's that started Revolution Airlines, he was the first bush pilot to land a ski plane on a glacier. Huh. Yeah. Interesting. And he ended up having four daughters and no sons, and they all became pretty famous bush pilots too. You know, they take hunters in and fishermen and, you know, that's what they do. Drop them off and then come pick them up when they're done. Anyway, so your dad did that for that summer. And
so can you describe a radar dome a little bit better? I'm envisioning like a water tower, or is it bigger? Or?
Yes. Yes. Water tower. Water tower, but taller.
Okay.
You'll have to Google it after we're done. Uh-huh. Really tall, you know. If you fell off, it'd kill you for darn sure.
So did your dad think granddad was trying to kill him?
He did. He was like, Colonel Westbrook, are you trying to kill me? And dad was like, no. Nah. He said, this is like one of the best jobs in the summer. They're hard to come by because they pay you so much. It was like, I'm just kidding. Not. Anyway, so yeah, and then he went back to the University of Missouri, and you know, I had my senior year in Alaska, and then your dad graduated from the University of Missouri, and then he came to Alaska for the summer and worked. He did not do radomes that summer. I can't remember exactly what he did, but we got married in August. And then your dad had orders.
August of the year that you graduated from high school?
No, I'm sorry. I graduated from high school in 1962. Why was that 64? I stayed up there and worked a semester after I graduated from high school. And I think your dad and I both went back to the University of Missouri in January. And yeah, that's what happened. And so I did my freshman year there while your dad was doing his senior year. And then we came back to Alaska for the summer. Actually, your dad had to go to summer school to take a Spanish class. So he stayed there and finished and graduated in August, and then came to Alaska, and we got married August 22nd. I went back to Alaska and worked for the summer. And then he had orders to go to pilot training in October. And so we had, you know, September and October, most of October actually. And so he got a job working up there, doing concrete work. They paid a ton of money because they work when it's light, you know, which is like 20 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And I know you've heard of those guys.
This was all 1964, the year you got married?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So 64. Yeah. So, I'm sure you've heard about guys who go to Alaska. I mean, there were a lot of them. They go up there and they work for 3 months and then go back to their families and have enough money to last the rest of the year, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, that was that. And so then, in October, we flew to, Phoenix, Arizona, and your dad started pilot training in October of 1964, and we lived in Mesa, Arizona. So.
And so how many years did you go to the University of Missouri?
One and a half.
Okay.
And then when Bill was in, when he was going through pilot training, and then when he went to Vietnam the first time, I went to night school in Arizona, so that by the time we got to wherever it was, Virginia, and then he went back to Vietnam and I decided to finish school, all I needed was a year, you know, a year left. Uh-huh. So. What are you doing?
I have a tchotchke for this. I have the GM Desert Proving Ground, Mesa, Arizona, Yorktown keychain with of yours, I presume. little Foley work there. It's got all these crazy looking keys on it. Do you know what these would have all been for?
No, you'll have to, I'll have to see it when next time I see. Good grief.
Like these weird shape, you see, or?
Yeah, I see them.
And
I have no idea.
Anyway, for some reason, I've always treasured it. I don't know how it came into my possession. But actually, I do know how it came into my possession. It was in one of those weird, or it was in those, you know, the little, I'm sure this actually probably originally came from Hechinger's, referring back to our Virginia conversations, but that toolkit with all the little drawers in it that I have that Dad kept his screws and stuff in.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that keychain was in one of those drawers.
Well, that it almost looks like that's some kind of, when I worked at the Desert Medical Proving Ground, it was like it was like going into an Air Force base. You had, you know, you had a badge to get in through the gate. And, seriously.
I just want to point out that you just said Desert Medical Proving Ground. Oh. I don't think you can say the word desert without saying Desert Medical.
I don't think I can either. General Motors Desert Proving Ground. How's that? That's funny. That's embedded in my brain. Anyway, yeah, you had to go through a security gate like you were going into a military base, and then, you know, you had getting inside the building, the same, you know, there was a place you had to park exactly where you had to park every day, and then getting in the building, you had to go through security, and it was like, let me tell you, testing new cars so people can't see them is a big deal, apparently.
Hold on, so I've missed that. So you worked, that's where you worked?
Yeah, when your dad was going to pilot training.
And that's where this keychain is from.
The keychain is, but those keys, I didn't have a key. I had like a, you know, a military pass.
Well, I've always envisioned that these are just some secret series of about, it looks like there's about 30 of them, safe deposit boxes where there's all kinds of gold bullion stored or something.
You know what? They may have been something that Granddad gave to you, old safe deposit keys from the bank.
Oh, it may have been a bauble kind of thing for me, like a toy at some point. Huh.
Exactly. Yeah, because they do look like safe deposit box keys, don't they?
Kind of.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I need to see them the next time I'm there.
I've got them waiting.
Anyway, so yeah, I think that's pretty much about your dad's life up to marriage and the beginning of pilot training.
Okay. Well, so if I know we've been on the phone for a while now, but if we could just speed through. So 64 pilot school in Arizona. What were you there for? Can you connect
like
the dots
a year and
between
a half.
Arizona and San Antonio? Or San Francisco? All right, so Arizona.
Well, yeah. Okay. So pilot training is like a year and a half. And then, you know, your dad got orders to go to Vietnam and in the F-4. So that meant going to Tucson for 3 months for training in the F-4 because he had not flown that airplane before. He had to learn how to fly that airplane. And then he had to go to to Tampa for 3 months to gunnery school and night bombing school. So there's 6 more months. Anyway, he left for Vietnam in October of 66, I think.
And so when he was in pilot training school, was Vietnam hot yet? Like, did he know that he was bound for Vietnam or?
Well, no, but he did about halfway through, I think. It was getting hotter, let's put it that way.
And was there anything else going on in the world that he would have been sent to?
No, it would have just been like a standard protect the world thing, you know, protect the U.S. or protect Europe or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Protect Asia. I would say a protective, just like they train for war when they're not at war, right?
Yes.
So, yeah. anyway, so yeah, so he left in October of 66. We left Tampa after he finished night gunnery school there, which is when Hurricane Alma hit. And then we drove across country to back to Phoenix and found me an apartment in Mesa. I decided to stay there while he was gone for that period of time, because Sambo had started pilot training and was there, and they had just had those twins, and I figured they could use my help. So I got a job and at the salt water utility company there that handled all the water for Phoenix, and worked, you know, from 8 to 5 every day. And then I went to night school at Phoenix University, I think, or somewhere there in Tempe. Maybe it was ASU. No, I think it was Phoenix. Anyway, I took 6 hours at night. So basically I worked from 8 to 5 and then went to class from 6 to 10 every night, just to wear myself out, basically, you know. And then I would go out to Williams Air Force Base. Sambo and Kate actually got quarters on the base because they had 3 kids. And when we were going through pilot training, we just lived in an apartment in Mesa. And so I would go out and help them and then start the week all over. And at the time, your assignment to Vietnam was not for a year. As soon as you got 100 missions, you got to come home. 100 missions up north, above the, you know, up to Hanoi, basically, in the danger zone. So your dad, of course, volunteered for every mission up north, crazy man that he was. And he got to come home in, it was either 8 or 9 months. They changed that after that first year when he was over there. They were like, wow, we're just gonna have to make it a year. Well, they lost a lot of pilots, and so, you know, they kept changing it, and then they had a thing called the ERD, which was your early return date, meaning if you had spent a year or a tour in Vietnam, you know, a whole tour, they could not send you back for 3 years. And then that went down to 2 years, and then that went down to 1 year, and then they had lost so many pilots that that went down to, according to the DOD rules, we can send them for 179 days and it's not counted as a tour. So basically temporary duty, you know, which they did in Afghanistan with those poor guys who've been over there about 10 times. Anyway, so when he left, when he went from Holloman, when you were 2, that was 179 days, was not considered a whole tour. Okay. The rules were always changing, but yeah, the second time your dad went, he was there for a year.
So when he got back after the 8 month ish first tour, then he
was San Francisco.
Well, and according to the rules, he didn't have to go back for 3 years or two three years. And that came true, right? That's so the next time he went back was.
Yes, that did come true.
When Holloman went after I was born.
Yep. So it was San Francisco, San Antonio, Holloman. But somewhere
Norfolk,
in between.
Wasn't Norfolk between San Antonio and Holloman?
Yep.
This is our traditional walk through this part of our.
It is. We got stop it. We're not discussing this today.
No, that's okay. We only have to get out to San Antonio. So so basically when you were in Phoenix where Sambo was, I did not realize that you were there with Kate and Sambo when they had the twins and stuff. So that's interesting. Yeah. And then dad came home early from his year-long tour in Vietnam. And then next you guys were sent to Hamilton and Novato, north of San Francisco.
Yep.
And you were there until you went to San Antonio?
Yep.
awesome.
2.5 years, I think, almost 3 years.
And so at what point in Dad's career was his 5-year commitment for ROTC paid
over?
Due? 69-ish, like right before I was born, probably.
Yeah, well, and you know, you get an extra year tacked on if you decide you want to go to pilot training.
Okay.
So I guess then
extra
that was
year
6 years.
Or extra year?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Extra year of commitment, you know, because it's
so expensive.
Because
when you're in training, it doesn't count.
Yeah, when you're, you know, it's so expensive to train pilots for, to be pilots. If they could get out in 4 years, they'd go work for commercial, you know.
Okay, yeah.
Is the idea, which is probably true, but depending on whether commercial.
Well, and when they're in training, they're not providing service.
That's true. So, yeah, it's apparently it's just like super expensive to train pilots, and I can see that. I mean, anyway, so yeah, so he went active in October of 64, so it would have been 70, the year you were born, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I know that he was working on his master's at American University. Was he pursuing that in with the idea of, was that something to further his Air Force career, or did that, or was, what was his intention there?
Well, I'm sure it was, but he always had a love and an interest in Russian political science, you know? And of course the Cold War was hot then, you know.
Yeah.
They were doing this strategic arms limitations, treaties and all of that stuff. And he was just fascinated with it. So, and he had always, he loved history, was his, history and politics. It always fascinated him. So, yeah. He was doing it to further his career, and, yeah, I would say that was the answer.
Great. Well, that was a lot, and that was terrific. It's fun to think about those days before I was around and you guys were had the world ahead of you.
Yes,
and and all the grandma and granddad stuff. So that's super fun to connect all those dots. I'm sure I could go down 100 of these rabbit holes and we could talk forever here, but maybe we'll revisit this topic in the future or see what happens.
Yeah.
But
Hey, I'm always open for discussion.
Well, that's all I have.
Okay. All right. Love you, sweetie.
Love you too. Thanks, Mom.
All right. Talk to you later.
Go ahead. We don't have to hang up.
No, I was just going to say, talk to you soon.